This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 29th at 10:30 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Like, this will be the year that pollsters are vindicated and all of their polls will turn out to be exactly right. At least the averages of them.
Sure, that'll happen, Mike. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly guide for what to make of all those TV ads and mailers making a last-minute pitch for your vote. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, Columbus and Cincinnati take action against Ohio's nuclear bailout law, since state lawmakers have not taken action.
But first, an update on where we stand just days from the end of voting in the 2020 election. More than 2.2 million Ohioans have already voted early. That's more than a quarter of all registered voters here. Lines outside county boards of elections remain long. Democrats have made up the bulk of early voting so far, but Republicans do seem more comfortable with voting in person on Election Day. So please keep that in mind.
This close to Election Day, most experts say you should not be mailing in your absentee ballot. Take it to the drop box that sits outside your Board of Elections, or deliver it in person if you feel comfortable, more comfortable that way. You technically can mail it in, but you're putting a lot of trust in the Postal Service if you put it in the mail this late in the game. Ohio will count your ballot if it is postmarked by the day before the election. Of course, that's Monday, November 2nd.
If you still want to vote early in person, you can do that. Polls are open Thursday and Friday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday from 8 to 4, Sunday from 1 to 5, and on Monday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m.
So after that, though, you're down to Election Day. Normal voting hours. Polls are open until 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday. Now, with all that said, let's try to figure out where Ohio stands as we approach the finish line of this exhausting campaign. Joining us now is Kyle Kondik. He's the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball. That's a campaign and election newsletter from the University of Virginia Center for Politics. He also wrote the book, The Bellwether, Why Ohio Picks the President. Kyle, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the title of your book. In 2020, will Ohio be the bellwether? Will Ohio pick the president of the United States?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that it is going to be as reflective of the national voting as it has been in past years. 2016 represented something of a break in that Ohio generally was a little bit more Republican than the nation in its presidential voting, but that kind of widened out in 2016. Donald Trump won the state by 8 points, despite losing the popular vote by 2 points. So it was 10 points more Republican than the nation. Ohio might be a little bit closer to the national vote this time, but I still expect the president to do significantly better in Ohio than he does nationally, however he ends up doing nationally. But there also are some signs that Trump's margin, even if he wins the state, is probably going to be smaller than it was last time.
Is there a key to Trump winning Ohio? Is there a winning strategy? He was in Circleville, about halfway between Columbus and Cincinnati a week ago. He's obviously making a last-minute push for voters here. Is there a definite strategy, you think, for him in Ohio?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's to maintain the really huge margins he had in kind of small town and rural areas across the state. He did great in particularly in eastern Ohio and also a lot of the traditionally very Republican counties in western and northwest Ohio. You know, I think that it's pretty clear that he's going to, you know, lose the three big urban counties by a lot, probably worse than last time. I think that it seems like Biden is going to make up some ground in some suburban areas around the three big cities and also places like suburban Dayton and Toledo and Akron, et cetera. But ultimately, in order for Biden to win Ohio, he needs to cut some of Trump's towering margins in kind of outstate areas. And so long as Trump can sort of maintain those sorts of margins, he's going to be fine.
The numbers that Democrats are pointing to is Ohio now has 8.1 million registered voters. That's just short of the record the state set back in 2008 when President Obama was on the ballot for the first time. What does that tell you? Does that tell you that Trump maybe has maxed out his rural vote and the Democrats are hoping that the suburban and Democratic vote increases or will lead them to help win the turnout battle, which could lead them to victory?
Well, look, I think there is some evidence, not necessarily specifically from Ohio, but from other kind of similar kinds of places in other states, that that Trump may not be able to maintain those kinds of huge margins in some of the places we're talking about, like Eastern Ohio and West Central Ohio. I mean, he's still going to win those places by a lot, don't get me wrong. But, if his margins in some places drop from 70-30 to 65-35 or something like that, plus in a lot of these counties, plus, increasing it by increasing the margins in some suburban areas and big city areas, that's where you start to see the state really, really getting closer and more competitive. I think that some of the places to look for, in the Columbus area, we've seen, I think, some real Democratic growth in the northern Franklin County, southern Delaware County suburbs, Troy Balderson's congressional district. That's a place to watch. Obviously, that was a competitive special election in 2018. Mm-hmm. And then also Dayton and Cincinnati, places where where I think that Biden has some real opportunities for growth. I mean, obviously, a vote anywhere in the state matters. It's not like we have an electoral college inside of Ohio. But those are some of the places I'll be looking on election night.
Is there one county in particular you're going to be watching, if you could pick one?
I think Wood County, which is where Bowling Green is. It's just south of Lucas County, where Toledo is. That's a pretty decent proxy for the state right now. That's a county I'll be watching. Biden has to win Montgomery County, where Dayton is. That winning that county is usually necessary but not sufficient for Democratic victory. So that's another one. But yeah, Wood County I think is a decent one to watch. If Biden wins Wood County by one or loses it by one, doesn't really mean all that much. I'm just sort of looking for trends.
Yeah, looking for a bellwether within the bellwether.
Biden needs growth all over the state to make up an 8-point gap. You look at like a Pennsylvania or Michigan or Wisconsin. Clinton lost those states by less than a point apiece. She doesn't need to do that, or Biden doesn't need to do that much better to flip those states.
Yeah.
But Biden really needs to do a lot better to flip Ohio.
Kyle, getting back to these early voting lines, what do you make of these long lines? They are mainly the ones we've seen here in Ohio have been in large metro areas that are almost certainly going to go toward Biden anyway. We've seen brisk voter turnout in other places as well. About 2.2 million Ohioans, about a quarter of all registered voters here, have already cast an early ballot. Again, we know Democrats are more likely to vote early, especially during this pandemic. But is there anything else you can read from this record-breaking early voting turnout?
So we're seeing it all over the country that there are a lot of people voting early. Part of it is that voters have become more and more accustomed to voting by mail and voting early because those options have been available to them. They've been available for a relatively long time in Ohio. They're sort of newer in some other states. And we're also in the midst of a pandemic, and so people want to space out their voting. They want to try to do it safely so that they're not stuck in some huge line on election day. I don't think the early voting really tells us anything about whether Biden or Trump is likely to win the state, though. I wouldn't draw mm-hmm. conclusions in Ohio. I think turnout's going to be high. I think turnout's going to be high all over the country.
Yeah. Before the pandemic, Ohio's economy was kind of a mixed bag. Unemployment was low, but in 2019, before the pandemic, Ohio saw its slowest job growth in 10 years. Manufacturing jobs had increased modestly, but there were some notable losses. The Lordstown GM plant up in northeast Ohio, for example. How is Ohio's economy going to play into this election and who wins here in Ohio?
I'm not necessarily sure it does. I think that in federal elections, a lot of voters seem to interpret things through sort of national trends, and I think that the economy is typically important in elections, but I think we're in an era of sort of tribal partisanship, and a lot of people are voting for reasons other than what their own personal economic situation is. I mean, look, if you're the incumbent, you want the economy to be as good as possible, but that's not necessarily the be-all and end-all of the election. So I can't sit here and tell you that economic problems in Ohio necessarily would, say, for instance, sink the president. I just don't know if that's the case.
Is COVID a big deal here? As big a deal in, say, Wisconsin, the cases are really flaring up. And, of course, Florida and New York, Florida being a swing state, had earlier troubles. How big is COVID the number one issue that you're watching, that voters are watching, do you believe?
I don't know if it's the number one issue, but certainly COVID remains very salient in people's lives, and I don't think that the general consensus is that the president has done a great job handling it. And I would think that the president would have preferred there to be other issues sort of more paramount at the time of the election than COVID. And yet here we are with cases spiking in a lot of places. Again, just like sort of the economic question, I'm not sure that increased caseloads in certain states may have some sort of, you know, negative effect for the president. I think that's a question for political scientists to investigate after we get the results, really, because I just don't know one way or the other. Certainly intuitively you would think, oh, well, if COVID's bad, that's bad for the president. But again, I don't know if you really can look at the numbers and sort of prove that at this point. But I think the fact that COVID is still so relevant is, you know, it's not a good issue for the president, I think. And so that, to the extent that it matters, I think it matters in that way.
Yeah, it's also spiking in Europe, and people are seeing that as well. And it might soften some of the effect here in the U.S. if they see this truly as still a global pandemic and issues around the world.
Kyle, you know, the candidates haven't really been to Ohio that much. President Trump was in Circleville not that long ago, and Joe Biden has been in Toledo and Cincinnati recently, but nowhere near previous campaigns. Like in 2004, we stopped covering Canada appearances because they became so common. And, you know, part of this is obviously because of the pandemic. There are fewer in-person events. But is there a specific reason why Ohio is not as big of a priority right now? And do you think the candidates could live to regret that?
You know, look, I mean, I think that both sides recognize that Ohio has sort of shifted relative to the nation and become a little bit more Republican, relative to how the nation votes. And so it's not one of the states that's going to be decisive, I think, in the election. I mean, it's important. And I think if Biden were to win Ohio, the election would be over, whereas Trump has to win it to have a fighting chance to win. But it seems like a lot of attention has been focused elsewhere. I also think there may be a part of it too that because Ohio doesn't have a Senate race, that maybe there's a little less incentive for presidential candidates to come to Ohio just because there's not really a lot of other high stakes elections going on. I mean, I personally think the state Supreme Court races in Ohio are interesting and potentially important because the majority on the court is up for grabs this year, but that's not something that really would draw national interest. And there's one, I'd say, really competitive U.S. House race, Steve Chabot's seat in Cincinnati against the Democrat Kate Schroeder, but the other ones don't really seem super-duper competitive. So there's not a whole lot going on in Ohio, whereas, like, you know, a state like Georgia has two Senate races, Iowa has a Senate race, and a lot of House races. You know, those are states that are also ones that I think are kind of luxuries for Biden, but there are also benefits maybe to going that don't exist in Ohio because some of the down ballot consequences.
Yeah, that's one of the effects of gerrymandering, is that the gerrymandered districts are so uncompetitive. There aren't really competitive congressional races. You mentioned there's no U.S. Senate race. So there, other than the presidential race and maybe the state Supreme Court races, which we're watching, there's no big race here except for the presidential race, and that has to hurt the challenger, does it not, Kyle? Is it for turnout?
I don't know. I mean, look, the thing driving turnout is the presidential race.
Okay.
And, you know, you're going to have, I think you've got engaged partisans on both sides, and I think you're going to see a turnout that's higher than last time, and that's going to be, you know, there are going to be new people coming out for Trump, there are going to be new people coming out for Biden, and there may also be some voters who changed sides from last time.
So having a competitive Senate race really would not influence terribly, like say Maine or Colorado has right now, or North Carolina. It's not going to affect the presidential race. The presidential race affects those races more than the other way around, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think that to the extent that these races, you know, interact with each other, I think it's the presidential that kind of bleeds down. That's why, like, you know, the Ohio's first congressional district, that's a district that voted for Trump by about half dozen points or so. If Biden were to flip it, not only would that be indicative of him doing significantly better than Clinton did 4 years ago, but that might also help Schroeder beat Chabot in that House race, because the presidential helps set the tone for the down ballot races. I mean, there are people who split tickets, but not like there used to be.
Yeah. How about the TV advertising? Trump has pulled out for the most part. He still has a couple hundred thousand dollars left on the air. Biden is still spending here. Michael Bloomberg is spending between $3 and $5 million on ads the final week of the campaign. Does that really have an effect this late in the game?
You know, look, I mean, obviously you'd rather have more ads than less. I don't necessarily know if there's going to be some sort of huge impact from the campaign advertising. I mean, I think what the Bloomberg side saw was that there actually wasn't that much on the air, or there was airtime to be bought, and they decided they thought that Ohio was winnable, so they made this fairly significant late investment in the state. I think primarily it's just bad news for some of the network affiliates in the state that they're not getting as much as they're used to.
It's been nice for me as a viewer of Ohio television in the fall, particularly. I remember previous election cycles during football games just being inundated with ads, and that hasn't really been the case. I was watching the news this morning and I saw a couple Joe Biden ads, but nothing like it felt like it was taking over the airwaves.
I just came back from Florida visiting my parents. And the TV down there is just like Ohio has been the past few cycles. It's nonstop ads, negative, positive. It felt like a bit nostalgic for the old days in Ohio.
For better or worse. Kyle Condict, the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball. That's a campaign and election newsletter from the University of Virginia Center for Politics. He also wrote the book, The Bellwether, Why Ohio Picks the President. Kyle Condict, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kyle.
We'll be right back.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious Seabus is WOSU series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at WOSU.org/curious.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. There seems to be a lot of political will behind the idea of repealing Ohio's nuclear bailout, or as the State House crowd just loves to call it, House Bill 6.
Yes. Can we call it Law 6 now? House Law 6? House Bill?
Yeah,
it's not a
bill
anymore. I learned that back in, you know.
the old songs.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Just a bill.
Anyway, this is the law at the center of the state's largest bribery scandal, which led to the indictment of former House Speaker Larry Householder and four of his allies. As we record, apparently, a couple of those allies appear ready to make plea deals.
That's right. Juan Cespedes and Jeffrey Longstreth have filed for potential plea deals. Documents still being withheld, though, as of this recording, so we'll keep you up to date on whatever happens there. Because of House Bill 6, or the nuclear bailout, starting in January, Ohio electric bills will change. No longer will they include charges to subsidize renewable energy sources and efficiency programs, but they will include charges to subsidize two unprofitable nuclear power plants along Lake Erie and two coal plants, one of which is in Indiana.
Imagine that. Well, some state lawmakers wanted to stop the charges from taking effect until the law is repealed and perhaps replaced, as Republican leaders promised, but that did not happen. Now, the cities of Columbus and Cincinnati are suing to keep their residents from having to pay for those bailouts. The city's lawsuit claims that HB 6 amounts to unconstitutional lending of state credit to a private enterprise. So, complicated, bit of a long shot.
Probably.
But cities are trying to do their thing to stop people from getting charged from Bill 6.
Yeah, it could be a genuine effort to protect their constituents. It could also be politics at play here, right? The city of Columbus and the city of Cincinnati are controlled by Democrats.
Yep.
That's probably not a coincidence that you have Zach Klein standing at a press conference announcing this lawsuit. And
2022 is not far down the road, so these folks are looking for attention. All those folks, Zach Klein and Mayor Cranley down in Cincinnati, have been talked about as statewide candidates. Speaking of the law, there's been really no movement in the legislature to repeal and replace House Bill 6. A panel of lawmakers continues studying the issue. Not much work being done, of course. It is an election season. Lawmakers are running for re-election or trying to help others get re-elected, so not much is happening with anything at the State House right now.
Yeah, we will have a lame duck session after the election.
That's
when,
where you need
when,
to watch.
When consequences are low for lawmakers, when they're unshackled, if you will, especially if they are truly a lame duck and they are not going to be back in office in January.
It's also the furthest point away from the 22 election. The 2022 election, when the campaign begins on Wednesday, November 4th. Make no mistake, the campaign begins right. It's actually already begun for the folks eyeing Rob Portman.
Yeah.
But I cannot believe that Governor DeWine and Republican leaders at the State House want this law hanging around their necks as they start to look for votes over the next 2 years. But it's not just a Republican problem.
And there are political consequences for repealing this law. I mean, FirstEnergy has not been upfront about sharing their books. They've just said that these two plants are going to go bankrupt and close.
Yep.
If you take them at their word, that's a lot of job losses associated with your vote to repeal, especially if there's not a replace.
And that's why a fair number of Democrats,
sure, if you're a lawmaker from Northern Ohio, you're going to vote to potentially put thousands of jobs on the hook. That's not politically tenable.
I think they're hoping that it fades away, and right now it has faded out of the spotlight, thanks to the presidential election. But you know, Democrats are going to make noise about it, starting when the 2022 elections begin. Democrats, you know, they're not clean in this. They put Householder in the speaker's chair.
Mm-hmm.
Many of those Democrats, as we mentioned, voted for the bailout. So that's something to watch once the dust settles, if it settles.
If it settles, when it settles.
From the current election. But it's still worth keeping an eye on. I mean, we had the possible guilty pleas today. We'll see where that leads to more details coming out. This is a huge story that has gotten overshadowed by the election and by COVID, and it shouldn't be overshadowed, and we should keep an eye on it.
Anyway, as you mentioned, the dust settling in that vein. In the hopes of a drama-free election next week, we are going to take a break from our award where we dole out to the shrewdest politician or the political move. No Snollygoster of the Week. Let's just sit around a campfire this week, Mike, play some folk songs on our guitars, and act like we're all BFFs.
Do you think by the time we record this next week, it'll be over?
No.
You don't think presidential race will be over? I think it will be.
Maybe the Associated Press and the like will be able to call it.
It comes down to Ohio. It comes down to Florida. Those are the two states to watch. If Biden can somehow win those two states, we may not know Pennsylvania. We may not know Wisconsin.
Kyle Condix said if Biden wins Ohio, it's over.
Oh, yeah. I think most people agree with that. And then, because that means probably Pennsylvania follows. But you never know. I mean, I listened to this podcast about the 2000 election and how the networks fell over themselves to call the races and then fell over themselves to uncall the races and then fell over themselves to recall the races. And we are all going to be very, very cautious.
No one holding a Tim Russert-esque whiteboard.
Well, he kept saying Florida was
Florida, and he was right.
Yeah, but he didn't say that Al Gore had won Florida, then George Bush had won Florida, then it ended up in the courts, and then ended up in a mess. Networks and news organizations are going to be extremely cautious in projecting anything. And I think the key thing is, one of my pet peeve time.
Uh-oh.
When people are counting, when you watch election returns, you should never say that, Joe Biden is hoping is closing in on Donald Trump in Ohio. No.
Because
Joe Biden has already closed or did not close on Donald Trump. The votes are in.
It's just a horse racing technique for television.
But that's dangerous in that there are so many votes out there left to be counted. If you keep saying that, you know,
Biden they're coming
needs
in
to catch up to Donald Trump with the mail-in votes. No, it doesn't need to catch up. They just need to count them.
I'm excited. In a weird way, we'll have more returns immediately in this election than we have in previous elections because so many are going to come in early. I mean, at 7:30 p.m. on next Tuesday, we'll have a flood of results that usually take, at least an hour or so to start coming in before we start seeing the Secretary of State reporting results. I would think a lot more are going to be posted quickly.
Oh, yeah. We should, between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, we get the absentee votes. And that's your early votes.
And it's going to be a massive chunk this year.
And it's going to be very misleading because it's going to be
heavily Democrat. Yeah.
So you take it with a real grain of salt. But it'll be interesting. We cannot say that Donald Trump hopes to catch up. No, he's already caught up, or he didn't catch up. We just need to count the votes that have been cast.
Listeners, this is my life on a daily basis.
That's my rant for the day.
That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. Be sure to tune in next week for what we hope is a breakdown of election results, but who knows. For our student producer, Jack Long, our audio engineer, Eric French, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Go vote, if you haven't already, for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.